Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
And instead it goes to Bailey!
Welcome, villains, and gather round for this week's episode of Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast by underagaslitlamp.com. I'm your host, Andy, and joining me this week, warm welcome back, Mr. Daniel Bettridge. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Andy. Good to see you. Good to be chatting, listener. Hopefully we're in for a decent podcast, although maybe Andy and I will have a funny 9 minutes where we forget how to podcast and it's just random noises and we lose all concept of time and space.
Yeah, well, it's usually 51 minutes of that and 9 minutes of fairly decent stuff. But we'll see how this one goes. At least 9 minutes of gold. It's usually before we press record, though, isn't it? But there we go. What a game to try and review after the Man City defeat last week. We were hoping that we'd have a more sort of comfortable afternoon, I suppose, at Villa Park against Brentford. Team sheet would have suggested that Pau Torres, Emi Martinez, Ollie Watkins all restored to the team. Of course, John McGinn was back from suspension. Moussa Diaby, perhaps a little bit unlucky to lose his place after a good few weeks, positive few weeks for him. And there's a definite feeling, isn't there, Dan, with the way if you compare the Man City lineup to the Brentford one, that he is sort of managing the loading on his players, isn't he, and the squad. Do you think this was as pretty much a stronger team as he could pick?
Yeah, I reckon so. I mean, we're running on fumes at the moment. I don't think it takes a genius to work out we've got injuries across the park. JJ's the latest to go down with a season-ending injury, and I think these are about the 11 players he can pick. I don't think we have much of a squad outside these players now. I mean, the City game showed us. No, don't want to dwell on it too much, but The starting lineup is like a pub quiz question. It was a bizarre starting lineup, and it was, I think it kind of shows you that we're short on numbers, and those players we do have, few of them look like they're carrying injuries. I know you and I have chatted about Torres maybe carrying an injury and we're managing his minutes, but I mean, these players have played God knows how many games with the Conference League and internationals and everything this year. So I think he does have to manage their loading, because the last thing we can afford at the moment is another one of our senior starters to go down. I think we're so threadbare at the moment that none of us want to see a lineup like that Man City one again, I don't think.
Yeah, and the problem with these injuries and the way it goes, and obviously, like we say, is the manager sort of managing the minutes, and the danger is that it gets into the players' heads a bit, doesn't it? And would it affect perhaps the competitiveness at times? Players, you know, trying to stay fit, you know, trying to avoid injury. I'm not saying any players would give less than their best, obviously, but you know, do players do things slightly differently if they're a little bit concerned, or if they know they're approaching what they used to call that red zone and maybe having to be a little bit careful? I don't know. It must be at the forefront of their minds when they see so many of their colleagues and teammates and the players that are obviously managing injuries or coming back from injuries. It must filter through and affect how they play.
Yeah, I think you're right. And obviously Emery isn't making these decisions on his own. He's got a team of physios and doctors and medical staff who are probably crunching obscene amounts of data to know when players are at risk and when they're not. But I think the other thing you lose with these players being out is is that competitive edge, but not because players are maybe ducking out of challenges or worried about it, but because they have no one pushing them for places, you know. Like, I think part of what made Villa so good under Emery is there's always been competition for places. You know, if you don't play too well, then you might not play next week or you get dropped from a big game. But realistically, at the moment, no one's going to get dropped because we can barely get a side out, it feels like. So you lose that competition for places as well, and you lose that little bit of edge too, I think. And I mean, look, this is the dog end of the season. It's the last puffs on a cigarette as far as Premier League football goes. And we're really struggling, I think. And a lot of the top teams, and I'm talking about the teams above us, have had to learn this the hard way, that in order to stay competitive in multiple competitions, you need to kind of manage your fitness throughout the season. We've always seen, you know, Man City are great at this. They're great at getting stronger as the season goes on and getting their players fit as the season goes on. And maybe this is just another learning experience for Villa, or maybe it's that everyone in the league seems to be coming down with injuries and players have simply played too much football over the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I suppose you look around at the other teams. I mean, you know, Tottenham, you know, obviously had a lot of absentees early on in the season, didn't they? But they're perhaps almost hitting their prime now in terms of their first team. Their absolute best starting 11. You know, pretty much there and available for them. Right at the best time possible. They've also obviously had less games than Villa. They haven't been playing in Europe this season. So, all the teams around us have a massive advantage in terms of their spending power as well and their ability to have quality in depth. You know, so. Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's amazing to me that we're still in this position. We were fourth going into the game. You know, I think we'd have all taken fourth in April, wouldn't we? At the start of the season. So it's been an incredibly positive season, the best season, you know, potentially since the 90s, possibly in the context of things. So. You know, it's been excellent. Can't complain too much, but we want to capitalise on it, don't we?
Well, this is the problem: is it's been such a good season, you almost forget how ridiculous it is, the situation we're in. You're right to draw parallels with Tottenham because you look at their squad and it's infinitely stronger than ours, and they've played 11 games. I think it is less than us, and we kind of knew, we like to think it wouldn't affect us, but we knew going into the season that the Thursday, Sunday would be difficult for us to manage, even with a fully fit squad. But to be in with a shout of Champions League football after playing City away with the likes of Olsen, Duran, Tim, all of that lot starting, if you'd have showed us that lineup at the start of the season, we'd have been maybe worried about relegation or even making the top half of the table. And I just think what Emery's done is, you know, we're a pretty positive podcast anyway. And I think this week, both you and I are feeling a bit bummed out by kind of the result of the weekend. But I mean, I think almost where we are is even more impressive given just the sheer amount of injuries we've got and how much Emery's had to deal with. If the fact was, as you say, in April, in with a really good sniff of Champions League football, even if we don't finish fourth, it's a wonderful season. And I was kind of saying to you before we record, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I almost want us to slip to fifth sooner rather than later so that we can focus on the Conference League. And hopefully over the next 2 weeks, we'll get a bit of a clearer idea if fifth will be okay for Champions League or not. But kind of, I think it might make me enjoy the rest of the season a little bit more, knowing that pressure's off, because it's been difficult the last month.
Yeah, it has. It's for sure. It's it's that worry, and I think you're right. If it's fourth place, I think we're possibly going to struggle. We are kind of in danger of falling over the line a little bit at the end of the season. But if it's fifth, we're in a great position, aren't we? You know, it would take an almighty collapse, a little bit like we saw on Saturday, but in a bigger context. To Yeah, it's it'd be almost parallel to an England batting collapse in India that we've witnessed a few weeks ago. But yeah, it's not impossible, you know, and we have to be aware of that. And I'm sure, you know, Emery and the players will be absolutely aware of the fact that, you know, there is a, although it's not a functional and coherent team at Man United at the moment, there is a squad there of some very talented players who can go on a run, you know. So we have to be aware of that. It's just they haven't yet done that this season to any great extent. But you know, really at this point, we need, you know, probably, you know, 8 to 10 points possibly to secure that fifth place. So, you know, let's hope they can do that. But obviously, getting on to the first half of the game, it was a really bizarre first half. I think Villa, barring probably a couple of minutes at the start of the game, they fully controlled the possession throughout the first half, pretty much playing in the final third or on the edge of the final third, as Brentford just sat extremely deep, really refusing to engage in any way as well. There wasn't really much attempt to try and win the ball. They just held their shape and congested the middle of the pitch. And it was really difficult for Villa to create any kind of space or any kind of opportunity to open them up. Having said that, they did manage to take the lead towards the end of the first half. And it was a Watkins header, which just kind of crept over the line before sort of Bailey made sure it had, but it had gone over the line anyway. So it was Watkins' 17th goal of the season. I find it hard to remember a time where I've seen any team defend that deep. And really, you know, with the game plan of kind of, you know, damage limitation from the start of the game, really. And that's because Villa haven't been this good for a long time, I suppose. But we really, really toiled, didn't we, to make any inroads, got the goal in the end. But do you think it's at all concerning that our attackers just seem to have no real idea of what to do in that situation?
Possibly. I mean, look, we've got to get used to this. On Villa's trajectory, this is going to happen more and more often to us, isn't it? We see it with the top teams. Teams come and just park the bus against them. And it is an effective tactic because it's hard to break down teams that sit that deep. We've seen it time and time again. And it's almost a different way of playing for Villa. Even up until recently, we've been a very transition-heavy team. But I'd say the one thing we've got in our favour on this is we've got players like Bailey who can create those moments of magic. But more than anything, we've got Ollie Watkins, who I loved his header for the first one. I think he's such a good striker because he doesn't just want it to feet. He can score those headers. He can score the ugly goals. And that's such a valuable weapon for us. If a team like Brentford are sitting deep, you can go a bit more direct. You can throw the ball into the box and he'll meet it to score. So it's one of those tricky ones because it's not fun for the neutral. I bet you didn't have particular fun inside Villa Park watching us toil to break down a deep line. But almost it's good news for Villa because as long as we keep control and we know, get our noses in front, and in theory you can hold on to the game by holding on to the ball. But I imagine the next stage in our evolution as a team, if we do become a Champions League team, is getting used how to play against these kind of defences, because it's going to happen more and more often to us as the more successful we are, isn't it? I suppose if anything, it's a compliment that Brentford, who are, I think, a decent team with a decent manager, sure they're not playing brilliantly this year, but they come to Villa Park and feel like they have to play like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was quite surprising, really, because I mean, look, Villa have kind of gone on a very similar journey to Brentford over the last few years. Coming out of the Championship, they came up a year after us, you know, and we've had that kind of period of time almost battling with them, and for a long time we couldn't get the better of them at all. They'd always beat us at their place. We'd tend to draw at Villa Park, and we've always had difficulty with them until you know, Aaron Danks found the answer to that last season in the wake of Steven Gerrard's sacking. And then obviously we beat them at their place this season. But I'm used to going toe to toe with Brentford, as daft as that might sound. But that's kind of how it's been. So to see Brentford play like that, I think in the context of the game, obviously we'll talk about the second half and what happened. It was perhaps a reasonable tactic to keep Villa within arm's length or level, hopefully, from their perspective. And then kind of try and exploit the space that perhaps opens up later on in the game. But it was very strange, and it was very frustrating to watch. And I've always had very little sympathy with managers of big teams coming out and bemoaning how an opposition manager comes and sets their team up and to frustrate and to keep it tight and park the bus and all these different phrases. I've always said, well, it's your job to, you know, to find an answer to that. And we're now in that position, and it's really frustrating to watch. It's really frustrating to see a team completely stifle your team. And I can understand why, a little bit why. I still see it from the other point of view. And obviously we do that perhaps at other places, bigger teams than us. But I can see where they're coming from a bit, Dan.
Yeah, I'm the same, actually. I've always thought it strange that you'd bemoan teams coming and defending against you. And to be fair, I don't think we'd ever hear Unai Emery complaining about a team being defensive against us. I think for him, it's just another challenge. It's just another puzzle he needs to find a solution for. And I bet you he'll be frustrated that we've not been better this year at breaking down low blocks. And that will probably be what he's looking at over the off-season if we do continue the way we're going. And, you know, it's one of those games, I think, as well. You look at some of the names we've got missing, that it's an Emi Buendia game for me when we're against the low blocker. You know, against Brentford, I think it was, a couple of years ago, when he laid that lovely through ball through for Danny Ings to score against Brentford at their place. And he's the kind of player you need when you're trying to pick the lock, as commentators always love to say it. But as you say, I've always looked kind of enviously at Brentford in the Premier League. I've always felt they're better run than us, and they manage to dig up talent for peanuts while we're spending money on over-the-hill players or players that don't want to play for us. And it just shows on the last 18 months the trajectory we've been on, that it's changed so much that they're now coming and defending for their lives against us at Villa Park when we've got the injuries we do, because it's just a different world. It's like we're in a bizarro world where I woke up one day and Villa are great again and we're a top four side and I'm worrying about drawing with Brentford, which probably would have been a good result a couple of years ago. So look, it's all still positive, and this is just hopefully what we're going to have to get used to as Villa fans, and I'm here for it. It makes a change of looking at the other end of the table and for a change.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think we've had a variety of approaches against us, and with varying degrees of success. Obviously, the Newcastle game where they just kind of they pressed the hell out of us, didn't they? And ran over us, really. That was a difficult one. And obviously Brentford have gone about things in a different way with a good amount of success in the end as well. Obviously reasonably happy at half time, and you know, very, very shortly after the start of the second half, Villa made it 2-0. Real blistering start to the second half. It was Morgan Rodgers who took the ball excellently on the edge of the penalty area, cut inside and really kind of, it was kind of, I want to say, drove the ball into the bottom corner, but it was more of a placed kind of shot, wasn't it? And right inside the near post. Excellent way to open his account. Looked really, really happy with it. And fully deserved, I think, after recent sort of promising performances from him. What have you made of Morgan Rodgers so far? Obviously the goal on Saturday. Do you think he's in line? Do you think he'll play in that that left-hand side position now with Jacob Ramsey out injured?
Yeah, I'm really excited about him. When he came in, I wasn't too sure. You obviously trust Emery, he knows what he's doing, but felt like a lot of money for a player who hadn't set things on fire in the Championship for Middlesbrough. And I think over recent weeks, he's been getting better and better and better. I really love the positions he takes up. He's very similar to JJ in that he starts on the left, but he comes all the way across the pitch. And it's almost unmarkable for the opposition fullbacks. And this was a goal that kind of came out of a similar kind of move. He'd gone all the way over to the right side and took it beautifully, I thought. Really nice control, a lovely little shimmy to kind of give himself that half a yard to shoot. And to knock it in was his left foot too, wasn't it? He knocked it in with. It's really impressive from him. He's young. What I like about him is he's almost a carbon copy of Jacob Ramsey. He's a strong lad who's very good at running with the ball. But where he differs from Jacob Ramsey is he's a lot bigger. He's a lot more physically imposing, which we need. And you're right, the Ramsey injury is upsetting because he was such a big player for us last year. And I think if he'd have stayed fit this year, he'd have stood a chance of being on the plane to Germany in the summer. But his loss is Morgan Rogers' gain. And I can't see anyone else starting on the left-hand side with the way that he's playing. And this next month and a half could be the making of his Aston Villa career, because I think we've got the beginnings of a very, very good player there. And whether we end up in a situation where it's him and JJ battling for that, or we sell one of them, or whatever happens, I think we've picked up a bit of a bargain here.
Yeah, we've definitely found a player, haven't we? And however they've kind of come across him, I would imagine he'd have been on the radar with the connections, the obvious connections we have with West Brom's academy, with Mark Harrison moving across to ours a few years ago. He would have known all about him and known about his quality and his ability. But it's not necessarily a signing that's led by the manager, is it? That's the curious thing about this signing. It was Emery's pick. You know, he's obviously, you know, seen him and liked him and thought, yeah, let's bring him in. And so soon as well, after he'd gone to Middlesbrough, it may have been, you know, an option where they thought, you know, let's wait till the summer and pick him up in the summer if we still want the player, So I think it's really interesting. He's kind of gone out of his way to sign him and then really thrown him in, hasn't he? It's not like he's had... I mean, I wasn't expecting really to see much of him at all this season. Maybe the odd bit here and there, but he's now a starter. You know, I don't see any reason not to pick him. He's really settled in well. He's obviously a good player. He's obviously got a good touch. But every week he's improving his the way he manages his game and on and off the ball and all those aspects. I think he played 90 minutes against City, I think, didn't he? I can't remember. But
yeah, I think
he generally
did.
Comes off. Yeah, and I was really disappointed to see him come off. I mean, he looked gutted, really, having scored the goal and then sort of seeing what happened so quickly and then getting taken off. But I was disappointed because I felt like he was the guy that was going to make something happen, really, at that moment. I feel like the sky's the limit for him. I feel like he's got everything he needs.
And he's got better every game, hasn't he? I think he's, every time I've seen him, at first it was very raw. It was very, you could see why we signed him. And then it's become a more complete performance every time he's played. I'd say the one area he's still lacking, which I think is the classic Emery bit where they lack, is the defensive side of things. He loves a yellow card. I don't think his defensive positioning's been great. And he hasn't struck up the kind of relationship that JJ had with Moreno. So I think that's an area of his game that Emery will be working closely on him with. But I mean, we've seen what Unai Emery does with players who are well past their prime or kind of 27, 28, 29. Imagine what he's going to do with this lad over the years. And Imagine how much of a confidence boost it must be as well for the manager to sign you because he's been watching videos of you and said, yeah, I want this guy. It's not some deep scouting metrics. It's not to fill a need. He's been watching videos of you and he wants you. And that must be such a confidence boost for him. And like you, I didn't think we'd see much of him. And if we did, I kind of expected to see him in that second striker position, which I still kind of think we signed him for. But yeah, we're short on the left. He's been given a chance and it's up to him to take it now. And hopefully he continues this trajectory of just getting better and better. It's another one as well where I think Europe's helped us is, you know, the extra games are an absolute pain sometimes and they've stretched us thin, but it's given him valuable minutes that all then pay off in the Premier League. So those 45 minutes, hours he's got in Europe that he might not have got otherwise, I think has accelerated his Villa career too.
Yeah, I think you're right with that for sure. I think it has. And in fairness, this was one of the things that Steven Gerrard talked about, wasn't it? You know, it's all very well having a big squad, mm-hmm. but you need games to play them in because you can't just have players, you know, sitting out or on the bench all the time. You know, you're going to pick your best team for the league games, and there's going to be a lot of players who don't get near it, you know. And being in Europe for a club like Villa is a must for that reason. The task now is to keep that going, but to make the squad ample enough to be able to manage that better. So I think they probably haven't rotated as much as he would have liked at times, particularly obviously in the striking positions, in the goalkeeper position, you know, certain things like that. But you know, that's the task now, isn't it, to kind of keep that going. But you're absolutely right. I think it's been great for Rodgers. He must be absolutely loving it. I bet he can't believe what's happened to him, really.
Wasn't he at Lincoln 12 months ago, wasn't it? He was at Lincoln and he's gone from Lincoln to the semi-finals of the Carabao Cup with Middlesbrough and now quarterfinals of the Europa Conference League with Villa and starting against City, his former employers. I mean, he's had a hell of a year, yeah. The young lad. And as I say, I think when we signed him, I said I'd read a great interview with him and he's got his head screwed on. He seems like an intelligent lad. And I'm really excited, genuinely very excited for him. It's been a while since the signings kind of, you know, just kind of slow burn got you excited like that. You normally hope for the big bang from the off, but this one just a little bit at a time has made me perk up and take notice. And I'm actually really excited to see him play on Thursday now. He's fast becoming a favourite of mine.
Yeah, I enjoy watching him. He's very good on the ball and very exciting to watch. But he's not the only player that has issues defensively for Aston Villa. In fact, most of the defence have similar problems defending their goal as the attackers. We criticise the attackers, don't we, for not being able to defend. And then we concede three very soft goals within 9 minutes. Absolute calamitous response, you know, at the time when you really need to put your foot on the ball and take the sting out of the game when you're 2-0 up. We just absolutely capitulated. You know, could you describe it as classic Villa? I mean, you know, it's not beyond the realms. It's not the first time we've seen it happen, although very unusual for this current team, admittedly. But it's obviously goals for Jorgensen, which was incredibly fortunate in terms of the finish. Mbueno and Wissa also got on the score sheet. All three goals from crosses from a similar area, really. So, you know, on Ezri Konsa's side, Carlos and Torres found wanting positionally on all three occasions, really, and leaving Martinez really unable to do anything about it, even with his history of pulling off heroics from unlikely positions. It was a complete shock, as Villa really had been totally in control of the game to that point and just appeared to switch off and succumb under very little pressure, as I say, not unlike the England batting lineup. how worrying is this, and what part of this was down to Villa's ineptitude as opposed to Brentford just being very clinical?
Oh, where do I start with this one, Andy? We could do an hour on just this. It's a horror show. I don't think Unai Emery is the kind of manager to throw a teacup at the wall, but I imagine after that 9 minutes, he was, you know, they were shopping for new teacups and saucers at Villa Park, so I bet you he was livid. Mainly because every goal felt like a carbon copy of the previous one, and there's a few things going on here. There's obviously the lack of Boubacar Kamara, as we've talked about in depth, and I think that's 8 of the 12 games he's not started for us, we've conceded 2 goals or more in, and that's not a coincidence. There's the absence of Tyrone Mings, who led us in terms of aerial clearances last year, and also, to not go all proper football man on you, is the kind of player who puffs his chest out and gets the rest of the team going when you know, your backs are against the wall. And I think this Villa side, without those two, does have a bit of a soft underbelly. I think it doesn't take much for us to go from looking terrifying and powerful to rolling over and just letting ourselves being tickled into submission. And I think that's it here, is we're missing key players in our spine. But there's some unacceptable defending here. I love Ezri Konsa. He had a bad day at the office. I'm really worried about Diego Carlos's future for Villa, because I thought he was... You know, we brought a bit of an animal in defence, and he's a bit more of a kitten, I think, when the ball's crossed into the box. And Pau Torres, we know, wasn't that kind of physical defender, but you clearly see that when he's not given a physical partner, he can't clear those balls. And it's a worrying one, because I don't think we can fix it. I don't think we can fix it this season with the personnel we've got. We need to get bigger. We need to get more physical. And I mean, teams above us have done that. Look at Arsenal this year. They were weak physically last year, and they went out and addressed that by signing taller, better, stronger players, and their defence has got better. The one worrying trend for me, and you mentioned it earlier about the Newcastle result, also when we lost to City, when we lost to Liverpool, the two types of teams Villa do badly against are physical teams and teams that press us high. And after sitting back and not engaging us, it seemed like Brentford very quickly got onto the idea that if you press us high and bully us a little bit, then it's an easy route to goal. And I just don't know how we fix that without the players at our disposal. I think it brings clarity to what our shopping list will be over the summer, that's for sure. But yeah, I think the worrying thing is, it seemed like a mad 9 minutes, but it's not a mad 9 minutes, is it? It's been the blueprint for how to beat us all season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it has. The signs have been there, and we were talking before, and I was thinking back to even the 6-1 win at home to Brighton, the 4-1 win at home to West Ham. We had spells in those games before when we were leading and very comfortable, and then had spells in those games where we conceded and looked quite vulnerable before we were able to kind of spring forward and add to our lead, sort of thing. And take the game away. Again, that could have happened. They could have got the goal back, and Villa could have gone, right, okay, let's click into gear here and let's try and get the third goal. But it didn't seem to happen. It seemed to really, really rock them. And the confidence, you could see the confidence drain, and they didn't really know, they didn't really have an answer. It's almost like that first goal, you know, and I can remember thinking, I feel like they're going to score again. You know, they got the goal, and I thought that's really strange that they've managed to do that out of nothing. I think we might be in trouble here, and it proved that way, and it was 3 goals almost exactly the same. The second one I think was disappointing. You know, it was the way sort of Reguilon had kind of kept the ball in just about with his head. But we couldn't capitalise. You know, they didn't have control of the ball at all. But we let them take control of it. We weren't quick enough into that situation, and they got down again. And you know, and you got to give credit to them. It was a fantastic performance. And I do wonder, you know, was it a little bit kind of a rope-a-dope situation, really, where we just got lulled into this idea that we were so comfortable, and it was such a sleepy afternoon, really, and it was a standard kind of Aston Villa home win. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they throw three absolute killer punches, and we've got a jaw of glass, and we're down on the canvas.
Well, it's true. The glass jaw analogy is a really good one, because we're a terrifying prize fighter until we actually get hit, and it's I wonder if
like Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, you'll know this better than me being in the stands. But is it almost a sense that we get too comfortable? You know, especially scoring that early after half time, and I know we've conceded at other times despite having leads, but the afternoon's almost too comfortable. We have loads of the ball. The crowd goes a little bit quiet because, as you say, it just feels like a walk in the park. And then it's hard to go through the gears again, isn't it, when you've taken your foot off the gas that much?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that was the sense I got. And then it was they really did have to change gear quickly and go after the game. And it was interesting, I think, that Emery didn't really make... He bought Zaniolo on for Rodgers, but he didn't really make too many changes. It was almost like, no, come on, you know, you sort this out, sort of thing. I'm not going to take you out the firing line here. This is on you. But yeah, I mean, it was really troubling, troubling performance. But the troubling thing was that it didn't just come out of nowhere. This has been coming. Forest very nearly did it to us a few weeks ago. We were 3-0 up. And then before we know it, it's back to 3-2, and they have another chance really quickly. And if they score that, you're in a similar comeback, isn't it? It's just the same really. So it's not unusual, and it's happened. And you kind of think, yeah, this has been coming, and they've not really addressed it. And you know, that surprises me as much as anything. I'm sure they will try now. My feeling is, I think, you know, when you're in these sort of situations, and let's be frank about it, you know, it's not like we're going down, but you know, we are up against it a little bit now. There is a blueprint for how to beat us, and particularly at home. And I just think sometimes you've got to go back to basics. And for me, you know, getting Matty Cash back as quickly as possible, getting him back at right back, and putting Ezri Konsa in his best position at centre half with Pau Torres, I think that those are a couple of changes that will do us the world of good.
Yeah, and I mean, the last 10 games we've not started the same back four and back to back games, and you can't keep clean sheets without having a regular settled back four. We've seen it throughout the last few years at Villa when we have a settled defence, we keep clean sheets. And I think it's no surprise that we haven't this year. I think I read the other day we've already conceded the same number of goals that we conceded last year, and there's seven games to go. So something's clearly wrong there. And I think, yeah, back to basics. We need Ezri Konsa back in the middle. But long term, we need to look at the profile of player we've got. It's all well and good playing nice football and keeping the ball on the deck and controlling the ball. But when teams go for you physically, you need to be able to have that fight too. And I mentioned Arsenal there. They're not the only team that do it. I mean, Man City play with four centre-backs these days because they're worried about the rough and tumble. And I think realistically this summer, Villa need to go out and buy a few more physically imposing players, because it's when Kamara and Mings aren't there, we are a little bit of a team of umpa-lumpas. We play lovely football. We're a technically very talented team, but we're not really up for the fight. So... And I think we've seen that. You know, Morgan Rogers is a tall lad. The young right back we brought's a big lad. We're clearly trying to add size to the team. But yeah, it's that lack of fight that worries me. But I suppose that's something you can't train, can you? It's a personality trait that certain players have. And I think kind of outside McGinn, who's maybe a little bit cowed after his red card that cost us, we're lacking fighters in the team. It's a sad one. What worries me the most is we're playing Arsenal next week, and Arsenal are both physical and press high, and I think it could be an absolute cricket score, because they are tailor-made to beat us, and I think they're the best team in the league. But look, this is a learning curve, right? Emery knows this as better than you and I. I think he's spotted this. And like you, I found it interesting that he kept the players on to fix their own mistake. And do you know what? They fixed it and got a point out of the game, and that will be a big learning experience for all of those players.
Yeah, certainly did. And you know, we have to give them credit for that. They did turn it round and go after Brentford, and we saw that spirit that we have seen, you know, in various games where they do press forward, and they are quite relentless in that regard. And it was 80 minutes when Ollie Watkins equalised his 18th league goal of the season. A deflected cross from Bailey, which looped over Flecken, and I thought Watkins rose Cristiano Ronaldo-esque at the back post. It was one of those kind of leaping salmon headers, and just nodded it home. I thought it was an excellent finish, really, really, really confident. And Watkins himself has made some comments after the game, which, you know, not everyone likes, do they, when the players criticise their team. He accepted his role in the whole thing as well, didn't he? And just suggested that they need to be a bit more switched on when they are in the lead. But whatever the outcome this season, I'm going to say, I just think surely Ollie Watkins is nailed on for Villa's Player of the Year.
Oh, easily. He's been phenomenal. And I'm surprised there's not more conversation about him being Premier League Player of the Year. Everyone's touting Foden's name around at all, but Ollie Watkins has the most goal involvements in the league. He's assists, goals, and as you say, I really liked his post-match comments. He's becoming a bit of a leader now. He's becoming a gnarled old veteran who knows the right things to say. And I mean, what a season. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Regular listeners of the podcast will know we've long been defenders of Ollie Watkins. And he's not always looked like he'd back up our good faith, but this year he's been wonderful. Best striker in the country, which, considering there's a certain Erling Haaland knocking around, I think is saying something. But he's a wonderful, wonderful striker. Scores different kind of goals, and it's good to see him score two headers this week, because I think that's maybe something he's lacked a bit this year. But he can do everything, and he's always had the skills and the temperament and the raw materials to do everything. He's just never quite put it together, but boy, is he this year. And I just hope he continues. Two more goals now for that magical 20-goal mark, and hopefully books his seat on the plane to Germany, and hopefully continues next year, because he's the most important player at Villa at the moment by a country mile.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, we've talked about him, it feels like, every week, and even when things haven't been going well for him, you know, we've discussed him, haven't we? And I must say, I've always rated him highly and always felt that he was, you know, a really good addition when Dean Smith brought him in, you know. But that he has undoubtedly frustrated fans at times. But it's the Premier League, you know. It's not easy to score goals in the Premier League. But what you've got here is a player that's done everything in his power to get to the top of his game. And who knows, he might have levels to go yet, you know, but I think this season he has just been a different class, and you know, we're fortunate to have him. We've put the work into him, haven't we? We've given him the opportunity, and we've backed him all the way. He could have fallen down the pecking order, you know. Different managers could have picked Danny Ings instead. They could have signed Tammy Abraham. They could have, you know, done all these things which might have got in the way of his progress. But manager after manager at Villa has backed him, you know, and obviously seen a great thing in him, and none more so than Emery, who's, you know, taking his game onto another level. And it's just great to see. And like you say, different types of goals. He's a threat, and even when he's not scoring, he's so important to the team. So it's fantastic to see. So he just needs those two goals. I've been waiting so long to see a Villa striker get to 20 league goals, and we're very close now. So let's hope he can stay fit and do that this season. But we won't dwell on that any more than we have to. It was a good point in the end. You know, better to get that point than not. Puts us on 60 points, which is, you know, an excellent total with six games to go. So you know, it's just the final run in now, and we'll see where we're at. But of course, the attention now will switch to Thursday night and watching Villa again on a Thursday night and back in the Europa Conference League for the quarterfinals against Lille. First leg at home, obviously, with the return match taking place a week later. Feels like this competition could suddenly become really serious. It has been kind of a, you know, important but also fun aspect of the season, I think, up to now. But now we're potentially five matches from silverware for the first time since 1996. And it feels like it's very much achievable if we can continue the form we've shown in this competition so far. I think Emery's main target remains to finish in the top five and get the Champions League place. But how would you expect him to approach this game this week, with it being at home as well? And do you think he might actually sort of prioritise this one over the Arsenal game, a bit like he did with sort of Brentford over the City game last week?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we're reaching the business end of the competition now. It's time to get serious. And for all the good Emery's done so far, he's not won anything yet, has he? I mean, it's a bit of a stick to beat him with when he's been in charge just over a year. But he'll want that trophy, and he loves a European trophy. So I expect us to go hell for leather for this competition. And it makes sense for us to do it. We've got the, in theory, and I'm touching wood as I say this, you've got the safety net of the fifth place Champions League finish there. And imagine a season where you qualify for the Champions League and win a European trophy. I mean, that would be a hell of an achievement. And I mean, for my mind, I think Lille are the other competition left in it. I think it's us and them are the strongest teams there, maybe Fiorentina as well. So this is almost a bit of a final for me, and I think it's a chance to put a bit of a statement of intent down and get a good home result and make the second leg a lot easier. But the other thing I'd say about this is we've seen him do it before. He uses the European games to get players back into form. He uses it to get over bad results in the league, and he likes players to play. He's one of those weird managers who doesn't want the time on the training ground. He wants them to play matches. He wants them to test themselves. And I think he'll be relishing this as a bit of a palate cleanser after the weekend. He'll throw the gauntlet down to the players to fix the mistakes they made and to go again. And yeah, forget the Arsenal game. That doesn't matter just yet. Just get a result out of this one and keep us in the competition. You going along to this one, Andy?
Yeah, I'll be there. It's an interesting one. I don't know. I don't follow the French league at all. So I know very little. I know Lille are fourth, and I think they're said odds on to I think it's the top four qualify for the Champions League from that league. So it's you know, it looks very very good for them, and they must be having a good season. I think Paulo Fonseca is their manager. I'm not sure, but he's been certainly linked with Villa on a number of occasions over the years, as he's been linked with everyone. But I think he's perhaps found a home at Lille. Be good for one or two of our lads as well, isn't it, to be back in France. Luca Dean, Moussa Diaby, etc. to be there. So, but yeah, it's not one I know. I don't know an awful lot about their team. I'm going into it very blind and obviously trying to manage my expectations, because I also think that playing at home first is a little bit of a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Certainly for Villa and the way we play, you know, it's very much about kind of keeping things, you know, gaining control of the game and growing into the game, isn't it? Whereas I think we're going to have to go for this and really try and make sure that we're going there with a decent lead. Obviously, any kind of lead is good, but I think if you can get a couple of goals ahead going into that, it really gives you that bit of leeway. And I think we're going to need to have to do that this week.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, look, if we are going to qualify for the Champions League, these are the learner's lessons, right? It's like we're a young driver. These are the lessons we need to get behind the wheel in the big boys competition. We need to learn how to win a game at home in a two-legged tie. We need to learn how to beat good teams who are on form, who maybe we don't know as much about as we'd like to. And And this is why the Conference League is such a good competition, I think, because it gives us a chance to learn about Europe and all these players that, you know, if we do qualify for the Champions League, and again, I'm touching every bit of wood in front of me, these matches, these midweek fixtures are going to be so crucial to the team to be able to navigate that competition next year. Otherwise, you end up like Newcastle did this year, where it's such a big deal when it blows up your entire season because you simply don't know what to do when you get there. These players will be a lot smarter and a lot more wily when, as a result of games like this. But as I say, I think Lille are a challenging side. I think we can't underestimate them. Emery obviously won't, but as fans, we can't. They're a very tricky outfit. And I think, same as you, I'd rather we were playing away first. Like, it always feels easier. It's kind of, as long as you keep them in sight, it feels like a good result away from home.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And we'll certainly be awaiting that one with interest. It could be a nervous night, could be a great night, who knows. We're hoping for the latter, obviously. But we're following that up, obviously, going to the Emirates to play Arsenal on Sunday at 4:30. Arteta's team really in stunning form, aren't they? Pushing really hard for the league title and the Champions League, potentially. They've got Bayern Munich. They could do us a favour with the old coefficient as well over the next couple of weeks. I've never used that word so much in the football context, but it's interesting. Obviously, Villa on the back of the two pretty disappointing results and seven goals conceded in that process. Douglas Luiz, which we haven't mentioned actually, will be suspended after picking up his 10th yellow card against Brentford, and he'll be missing for the Bournemouth game as well. I mean, Emery obviously will be keen to leave his mark at the Emirates. He won't want to be on the end of a pasting for this one, given how his tenure there as manager ended. Despite the recent form, would you bet against Emery pulling something off here?
Oh, I'm dreading this one, Andy. I'm dreading this one. Arsenal, they're by far the best team in the league, in my opinion, and I fancy them for the Champions League too. They just look like the complete outfit this year. And as I said earlier, Villa don't do well against teams that press high and teams that are physical, and that's exactly what they'll do to us. And I'd love Emery. I'd love him to get a mark of revenge and to get some points there. I just can't see it. We're hamstrung by injuries as it is, and the Dougie suspension couldn't come at a worse time. I don't fancy a midfield two of Tielemans and McGinn particularly in this game. It's especially Tielemans and his turning circle. I've never wanted to see Leandro Donker's face more in my life, and I never thought I'd say that, but I'd love him to be in the Villa Park ranks at the moment. But I have very little hope for this one. I think it's that there's not any weaknesses in there that I can see. They just seem an absolute wrecking ball with a team, scoring goals for fun, keeping clean sheets for fun. And I just don't see any way around them, which is rare because I've been hopeful about pretty much every game Villa have gone into this season. But this one just feels like insurmountable. Am I being a pessimist or are you on the same page?
No, I think you've got to look at it realistically, haven't you? And that's what the form suggests. Arsenal have been blowing teams away. I just think back to the 6-0 against West Ham. That was at West Ham as well, wasn't it? And, you know, people kind of brush that off as it's West Ham, you know. But West Ham are seventh in the league, you know. They're in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. They're no mugs at all by any means. And it's an incredible result. But they are, despite their lack of a striker that everyone keeps talking about, they're scoring goals from all areas of the field. They just look, like you say, machine-like. And they've, after a bit of a slow start, and obviously lost to Villa earlier in the season as well, they've really hit the ground. They've done the Man City, haven't they, this year? You know, second half of the season, they've really hit the ground running. And I think it's, I feel the same. I think they're favourites for the title. I think they're the best team in the league. I think we're going to have to pull off something, you know, absolutely stunning to get anything out of this game. I never predict Villa to lose. I tend to go for a draw if I think they're going to lose. So I'm going to say 1-1 as my prediction. But I mean, who knows? And I do think that over the next 10 days or so, Emery will be prioritising the Lille game, and we'll see a similar kind of rotation for the Arsenal game that we saw at Man City.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I have us down to lose this one handily, maybe even same as the City score. But it does kind of, I hate predicting a Villa loss, but also it makes me a bit upset about what could have been, you know. Like, imagine if we'd had Kamara and Dougie and JJ in the team, and, you know, that week against Arsenal and City earlier in the season showed what we can do when we've got a fully fit squad. And it's just a bit of a shame that we're playing these games kind of almost going back to the old days where you have no hope in it. Whereas I think if we'd have avoided some of those injuries and suspensions, I'd be still looking at these games as maybe not title deciders, but us looking further up the league, not just worried about what's coming up below us. But that's all to come next year, Andy. This is, the dregs of the season don't matter anymore. It's next year's title challenge that really matters. Yeah. So.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got to look positively on things, haven't we? And there's no way we can say things have gone a bit pear shaped in the last week or even the last few weeks, really, and have not looked quite so convincing. But over the course of the season, and even over the course of the 18 months or so Emery's been at the club, it's you can't do anything but just think it's been an incredible ride, hasn't it, for us? And you've got to enjoy that. You've got to enjoy that because you never know when it's going to come to an end.
Oh, I mean, it's pinch yourself moments, isn't it? And you know, I love coming on the podcast and chatting with you, Andy. But God, it was a struggle during some of those dark days. I'd love to see your face on a Monday night, but talking about whatever Gerrard calamity had come before, or the dark days of Dean Smith's era, this is a far cry from those days, and it's a far cry from the days of Mark Bunning goal and Julian Lescott doing keepy uppies with chewing gum on the sidelines. So just enjoy this ride while we've got it, because we all know how quickly it can change. And you know, these are happy times to be a Villa fan. And as I say, a fifth place finish would be gold dust for us this year. And who knows, that magical night in Athens might still happen. Hopefully, when we chat again next week, it will still be on.
It's interesting, the potential bit of controversy with Watkins maybe calling out the team after the game is nothing compared to our captain in a relegation capitulation tweeting a picture of his supercar after a massive defeat. I mean, that's, you know, we've it doesn't even scratch the surface, does it? Ollie Watkins making a comment about holding on to a lead. So, you know, it's different times, Dan, isn't it? But yeah, I won't ask for your prediction because I think it's going to end on a bad note.
Yeah.
yeah, listener, make of that what you will. No, I think that's all we've got time for. Great to talk to you again this week, Dan. Really, I mean, plenty of entertainment if not the right result for us. So all good stuff. Look out for Gather Round again later this week after the Lille game, where Craig will be on hopefully with one of us joining him to go over the Lille game. And of course, we'll be back next week to review the Arsenal game, and maybe they'll surprise us. You never know. But until then, listener, have a good week. Stay safe and up the Villa.